When a program or policy which is claimed to be beneficial actually attacks and restricts, then we have to ask, is it indeed a benefit? This past week, new EPA goals for the reduction of power plant emissions were revealed. Pitch was that this new environmental policy will be a positive action for the environment, for industry, for people, for jobs. The list goes on, at least according to the EPA. My guest is here to share exactly what the impact of this will turn out to be. And guess what? How you will be the one impacted. He's a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. We say good morning to William Yateman. Good morning, William.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Let me give you a couple of websites so you can find out more about this and other environmental and really more sense out of some of the policies and proposals that come out of D.C. CEI.org is the website for the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And more info about what we are talking about here specifically, globalwarming.org. That's globalwarming.org. And learn more about all this plans, proposals, and well, I guess, William, this is pretty much carved in stone. It's going to be policy now.
Indeed. In your introduction, you really got to the heart of the matter, which is costs versus benefits. And on the one hand, we know there won't be any benefits. No less an authority herself than EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy, during congressional testimony in September 2013, conceded that no actions that her agency could undertake, so that includes this giant rule you were just talking about, could impact global temperatures because the preponderance of greenhouse gas emissions, which is the putative cause of the so-called problem called global warming, occur in Asian nations. So we can't control that. So on the one hand, we know there aren't any benefits. On the other hand, we know exactly what the costs are. And indeed, I guess when it gets to the nuts and bolts of billions of dollars in utility bills, those numbers are as yet imprecise. The cost I'm talking about is an unprecedented and gross expansion of federal power at the expense of the state's rightful authority. And I'll just elaborate on that very, very quickly.
Sure.
For 85 years in this country, it has been federal policy not to get mixed up, not to intrude upon the state's oversight of electricity markets within the state. That has always been the state's prerogative. It has been that way since 1934 with the passage of the Federal Power Act. The upshot is this power that EPA is now asserting over states has long been denied to the federal government. And what is this power? EPA is assuming the authority to dictate to each state what its electricity resource mix must be. To date, states have used all sorts of criteria to decide how they want to generate power for their people. Usually fuel diversity is a big one. States want to, much as I'm sure many of your listeners have investment portfolios, you know, you're told to diversify for safety. It's the same thing with electricity markets. You want to have coal, you want to have gas, you want to have nuclear, you want to have hydro, so that if any one of these sources becomes prohibitively expensive, all your eggs aren't in one basket. Alas, what the EPA is doing, and this is an unprecedented expansion of federal power, it is dictating to all states, hey, no more can you guys have fuel diversity. From now on, you've got to put all your eggs in the natural gas basket and or these renewable energy, but that stuff doesn't work. So in practice, it's going to be natural gas. I don't want anyone to labor under the misapprehension that I'm not a proponent of natural gas. I'm pro-fracking, I'm pro-gas. What bothers me is when the federal government and the EPA in particular, the environmental regulators, use an environmental statute to exert powers over all 50 states' electricity markets, their energy markets. So these broad sweeping powers from an environmental statute that directly contradict what the Congress has spoken to this very issue. So that's what I'm getting at. The Congress has said, federal regulators, butt out of state regulation. That's what the Congress said. And now we've got EPA saying, we're going to go ahead and insert ourselves into that process, and indeed, we're going to take over that process. So that's scary to me.
And when you look at the fact, too, well, first of all, it's a 645-page plan, which means nobody who's talking about it has read it. So much like with Obamacare, you know, speaking of that, they're saying that, well, you know, some states that rely on coal-fired power plants, they'll have lower emission targets by 2030 than others that do not. Is that the EPA's equivalent of if you like your medical plan, you can keep your medical plan?
Indeed. I mean, and I'm loath to speak about health care because I'm an energy policy expert. And I will note right off the bat that indeed some people have read it. Here at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, both myself and three of my colleagues, we've all read the rule. That's what we do. So check out globalwarming.org if you want to learn more about it. But the upshot is, oh, golly, I guess I lost my train of thought. would you please refresh my mind as to what your question was?
I was just talking about the plan alleges that coal-fired power plants take.
I'm sorry, I regained my train of thought. You're exactly right. So that healthcare analogy, it is a misnomer. What we've got here is the agency conducting a lie, and that's not too strong a word because I believe the lie of the year was that if you have your doctor, you can keep it. We've got EPA perpetrating another one right here. The numbers that were released, these state-specific targets that would lead one to believe what you just said, which is like, hey, Kentucky, which is a major coal state, has a lower emissions goal than, say, Washington, which is a big hydro state. What that speaks to is some hocus-pocus, some fuzzy math, as President George W. Bush once put it. So despite all EPA protestations to the contrary, this rule does indeed impact coal-heavy states more. It's without going into too much detail, here's how it works. If you're primarily a coal-generating state, then you're out of luck. I mean, you're in a bit of trouble just because won't really have an alternative. To the extent that your state has any natural gas capacity, EPA's rule would require that state to ramp up that natural gas capacity to 70% utilization rates. This is as a gross aside, most natural gas plants run around 40 to 50%. That's because gas is expensive, and they usually run only when electricity demand is high. Coal plants, on the other hand, will run 85% of the time. They provide base load power, which is sort of that 24/7 power you need. The upshot is what we've got here is in states with a lot of natural gas and a lot of coal, EPA's mandates, I guess, will fall the heaviest because they're going to require a precipitous uptick in the utilization of gas and a commensurate downtick in the utilization of coal. So that's what I was getting at with my prior argument about putting all our eggs in one basket. So I'll just 2 points to broadly restate what I just said. One, don't listen to the EPA numbers. They're very misleading, these state-specific targets, insofar as you can't judge one against the other to get an idea of what any individual state, how onerous it's actually going to be. Two, generally speaking, if you got a lot of coal, you're in big-time trouble. And if you got a lot of gas, then you can expect your utility bills to increase insofar as, you know, gas in west of the Mississippi is twice as expensive as coal.
As we wrap up our time, William Yateman, Senior Fellow from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org, globalwarming.org, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So let's bring it down to the consumer listening right now, because you mentioned about natural gas. But the problem with that is you have an administration who is trying to restrict fracking and access to natural gas lands federally. The majority of the natural gas production has been through private industry, and they're facing more and more restrictions because, you know, they're next in line, I guess, after the coal industry gets collapsed on. And when you think of other alternatives like wind energy, you can have onshore, offshore wind turbines. Either one is far more expensive for energy production than electricity produced by coal, which at this point certainly has declined now from 50 to around 37%. But I don't see where any cost saving is going to be for the consumer. It sounds like a roundabout way to make people use less energy.
Oh, well, indeed. That's one of the four possible means by which EPA has laid out that states can comply. Just use less electricity, as if that's practical. But you bring up a great point. This is it's not even the case that first they're going after coal and then they're going to go after gas. I mean, this is a contemporaneous war against all fossil fuels. It's coal, oil, gas. I mean, you know, if you emit these GHGs, which cause the supposed global warming, then you are in the crosshairs of this administration and this EPA. So, no, you speak to a very, very important point, and one that all Americans should consider, which is, yeah, so we're taking coal off the table and we're putting a big emphasis on gas. That's their plan. At the same time, they're trying to take gas off the table. So we need the energy. I mean, you know, it's some people on the far left some of these environmental zealots may have you believe that we could all exist in caves.
Well, I heard one say that they want to have the goal of emissions rolled back to the pre-industrial era levels, which, according to my calculations, wouldn't that be the 19th century?
Indeed. And that is, you know, I guess that speaks to a whole different issue, which is the extent to which these environmental special interests, the Sierra Clubs of the world, the NRDCs of the world, that's Natural Resources Defense Council, how they give priority to dirt and air over human beings. And really the rule we're talking about is a perfect archetypical illustration of that, insofar as this rule doesn't achieve anything. It results in a gross expansion of federal power and considerable onerous cost for consumers. So, you know, this all costs, no benefits. It's all in the name of I guess, placating this, you know, this environmental mindset that, indeed, less energy is better. Less economic development is better. Because, again, we've got to give priority to dirt and air over human beings.
And ironically, here in New Jersey, we just removed ourselves from a regional cap-and-trade program, and this is going to force the state right back into one. To learn more about all this, the elements of this issue, globalwarming.org. And to expand your awareness of a variety of important issues, you can learn more about current events and policies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. That's CEI.org. We've been joined by one of the senior fellows, William Yateman. William, thanks so much for helping us gain a better understanding of exactly what the impact is going to be on this, on we the consumers. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, my friend.